This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
New tariffs in effect. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. It is Friday, May 10th. Thanks for spending some time with us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
In the midst of trade talks with Beijing, the Trump administration this morning enacted an increase in tariffs on $200 billion of Chinese imports.
The Colorado school that was the scene of a shooting earlier this week was warned months ago about a, quote, repeat of Columbine.
Uber becomes publicly traded today. As part of that, we'll identify five ways the ride-sharing company has changed our lives.
And what will happen now under the White House proposal to require pharmaceutical companies to identify drug prices in TV ads.
Well, I've been tracking this. Secretary Azar has been talking about this for quite some time and actually came out earlier this year saying this was going to be a priority and something he was going to push for. And so when the White House actually came out and said, we're going to do this thing, I was really excited. This is a good first step.
Seth Denson at GDP Advisors has analysis in about 25 minutes. Increased tariffs are in place this morning on imported Chinese goods. As threatened, President Trump has bumped up the levies on $200 billion of Chinese products from 10% to 25%. In addition, the White House is still considering further tariffs on another $325 billion of imports from China. The tariff hike went into force hours after U.S. and Chinese negotiators met yesterday in hopes of getting their troubled trade talks back on track. Discussions are set to resume today, but the White House has said it had no plans to suspend the new tariff rate.
I have no idea what's going to happen. I did get last night a very beautiful letter from President Xi. Let's work together. Let's see if we can get something done.
Beijing has said it would retaliate against the new U.S. actions, but did not specify how or when. China has rejected U.S. claims that it's backtracked in negotiations. That's been the main sticking point this week that's threatened to scuttle a potential trade agreement between the two countries. A woman claiming to be a parent of a STEM school student warned school district officials 5 months ago about what she described as her fears of a repeat of Columbine at the charter school in Highlands Ranch. More from this morning's Mike Gavin.
The anonymous warning also included complaints about rampant bullying and drug use and alarmed authorities enough that they requested an investigation by police and school officials. It's not yet clear whether there's any connection between the woman's complaints and the Tuesday attack at the school that killed an 18-year-old student and injured eight others. Two students accused in the shooting remain jailed and are expected to be formally charged today. Gordon.
Thanks, Mike. USA Today says STEM school officials in January adamantly rejected the woman's concerns and sued her for defamation, according to court records and a letter sent by school district officials. Because the woman's call was made anonymously, STEM school officials asked a judge to subpoena phone records to find her. Well, in three recent mass shootings, we've seen people sacrifice their own lives to save others. A 60-year-old woman in San Diego, a 21-year-old graduating college student in Charlotte, and most recently, an 18-year-old high school senior outside Denver. What makes these heroes tick? Mass shootings often have a common thread of heroism in them. People whose heralded bravery and decisive actions help stop the attacks and probably save lives, sometimes at the expense of their own. Here's Joey Garrison, national correspondent at USA Today. Joey, explain what you found.
A number of people I talked to concluded that some common characteristics of people who often do this are, you know, they have a strong moral center, that guides some of their decisions. They're often risk takers, and some of them have guiding principles, the way they were raised, that sort of when the moment like that unfolds, they step up for others. Those are just sort of some of the broader themes there.
If I read correctly or understood correctly, there was one person in your story who said
there's kind of a, or pose the question, there's kind of a difference between somebody who, I don't know, you may swim out in the ocean to try to save somebody struggling who might be drowning versus somebody who's actually going to step in front of a gun.
Yeah, well, there's a different, you know, sorts of heroes, I guess you could say. And I quoted this well-known professor from Temple who studied different types of heroes. He says there's, you know, lifelong heroes like Martin Luther King Jr. might devote their entire life for a greater cause, and that can be a heroic sort of action. There's a what he called 911 heroes, which I think you were referring to there, like your first responders, firefighters, police officers. So then there's what he calls situational heroes, and those refer to the people who, you know, emerge unexpectedly from a crowd during a moment of crisis, like we saw in each of these shootings. And then, sadly, we've had to talk a lot about a lot of heroes lately in the last couple of years, given the amount of, a lot of situational heroes, I should say, given the number of shootings in schools and in places of worship and other public venues. And we've had three now here in astonishingly just 11 days.
We're speaking with Joey Garrison, national correspondent at USA Today. He's written a piece entitled 11 Days, Three Mass Shootings, Three Heroes. What makes some risk their lives for others? And we've seen a variety, too. It was a 60-year-old woman, right, who helped in San Diego versus this 18-year-old student who helped in the Colorado shooting.
Yeah, and then and the third one, a 21-year-old, soon-to-be graduate from the University of North Carolina, Charlotte. You know, the 60-year-old woman in the synagogue in San Diego obviously wouldn't have the physical strength of the 21-year-old or even the 18-year-old in the lower school there. But she, according to, you know, some of the people I talked to, would have, you know, seen the synagogue as her sanctuary and a place that she would want to defend, you know, and seeing somebody come in with a gun. And so, you know, these are not people that, you know, these psychologists that I've talked to have ever met, and they haven't studied them individually, but, you know, these are, you know, hearing their stories and how they approach the situation, I think, does sort of match with what they see as some of the descriptions of situational heroes that they've more broadly looked at through their research.
This typically is not in a training manual either, right?
No. And, yeah, they're the group that I referenced earlier, you know, has a they don't recommend that, or experts of this field in terms of training for mass shootings, they don't recommend that everyone just charge the shooter. The first recommendation is, for, you know, to try to get away. If you can't get away from the scene, you know, then barricade yourself or protect yourself another way. But if it's a last resort, if neither of those two things are accomplished and you're in immediate danger, then, yeah, try to defend yourself by going after the shooter physically if you have to. That's sort of the third resort of three different options there.
Thanks, Joey. Joey Garrison, national correspondent at USA Today. 14 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
Michigan is one of the best places in the country to do business, but you don't have to take our word for it. Take Evan Lyles, CEO of Roush Enterprises, instead.
For the people that are involved in product development, there couldn't be more unique and exciting opportunities that are really going to shape the future of the world. It's a really exciting time to be in Michigan.
Big things are happening in business here. Find out why by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity.
This human resources professional is crushing it, thanks to Kronos. And this is his hype song.
You can fall back with the pack. I'm a leader pack.
I've got HR, payroll, talent, and time.
I'm on the top, I'm gonna rise up. Now we are
engaging all the best people.
Blast off to the front of the field. This is
Kronos, HR solutions for the modern workforce. Learn more at kronos.com/HR swagger.
Thanks for being with us. The man accused of killing one person and wounding three last month at a synagogue outside San Diego is now being hit with more than 100 federal hate crimes. He previously pleaded not guilty to state crimes. Prosecutors yesterday charged 19-year-old Josh Earnest with two types of hate crimes, including
the obstruction of free exercise of religious beliefs using a dangerous weapon. That was for each of the 54 people in the Chabad of Poway synagogue. Robert Brewer, U.S. attorney for the Southern District of California, said that after Mr. Ernest fled the synagogue, he called 911.
He called 911 from his car and identified himself as the synagogue shooter. Among other things, Ernest stated to the dispatcher, quote, "I just shot up a synagogue. I'm just trying to defend my nation against the Jewish people."
Mr. Ernest previously pleaded not guilty to state charges of murder, attempted murder, and arson. He also was charged with one count of damage to religious property in connection with a fire in March at a mosque in nearby Escondido. It's 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koshenka is here with more of America's First News.
Gordon, President Trump's latest tariff hike on Chinese goods took effect at midnight, and Beijing says it will retaliate, escalating a battle over China's technology ambitions and other trade tensions. Trump raised duties on $200 billion of Chinese imports from 10 to 25%.
We were getting very close to a deal. Then they started to renegotiate the deal. We can't have that. We can't have that.
China's Commerce Ministry says it will impose necessary countermeasures but gave no details. The increase went ahead even after U.S. and Chinese negotiators began talks in Washington yesterday aimed at ending a dispute that has disrupted billions of dollars in trade and shaken global financial markets. The three new missiles North Korean leader Kim Jong-un has tested over the past week are eerily familiar to military experts. They look just like a controversial and widely copied missile the Russian military has deployed to Syria and has been actively trying to sell abroad for years. Alarming North Korea's neighbors, Kim personally supervised the launch of the first missile from the country's east coast on Saturday and two more from the west yesterday, all splashed down in the Pacific. President Trump plans to nominate Acting Secretary of Defense Patrick Shanahan to formally take over the top spot at the Pentagon. Shanahan, a former longtime executive at Boeing, will need Senate confirmation. He says he's ready for the permanent post.
We've all worked together. The National Defense Strategy, obviously, is the high priority.
The 56-year-old had no prior experience either in the military or in foreign policy before he became the Deputy Defense Secretary in 2017. A rare Apple I computer made by Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak in 1976 could bring in up to $630,000 at a Christie's online auction later this month. The computer, still in working condition, is accompanied by a group of Apple-related artifacts, including the first manual ever issued. What began in 1976 as an attempt by Jobs and Wozniak to build a microprocessor became the first PC. They originally built 200 Apple I computers. Computers, 80 still exist.
Wow. Thank you, Jen. 23 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Glad you're with us. Home prices are on the rise, climbing another 3% year over year, according to S&P CoreLogic Case-Shiller 20-City Home Price Index from February released this month. Still, that growth is slowing, and some experts are predicting that we're increasingly entering a buyer's market, and that means sellers who want to get a premium for their home may have to work for it. Here's how from Katie Hill, editor at MarketWatch. Katie, set the scene.
Home prices are rising, although, you know, that's starting to change a little bit. It looks like we're increasingly entering a buyer's market. So I thought, you know, if you want to get a premium for your home now, it's not just like put it on the market and you're going to get that. You've got to work a little bit harder for it these days. So I looked into what research actually shows gets you more money for your home. Not what your real estate agent will tell you, but what actual research shows. The first thing is that timing matters a ton. So putting your home on the market in spring, that is the time to do it if you want to get a premium. So people who sold their homes in June, which means the house closed in June, so they probably put it on the market in spring, they got 9.2% more than other months. So again, that's putting your home on the market in spring. Multiple studies show this. One from Realtor.com that they just released showing that the first week in April is like the sweet spot for it. You can get about $17,000 more putting your home on the market in early April. So in other words, think spring.
All right. And that carries what, into May and June as well? There were some decent numbers?
Right. No, that's right. So spring and early summer, if you're going to put your home on the market at any time, so it's not too late, you're going to get a premium for those months. Slightly less than if you had put it in maybe early spring and sold it and actually closed in June, but still, you can definitely get a premium.
All right. And don't run out and just overhaul the kitchen and spend $50,000 on that.
No, everybody thinks that, oh, I got to renovate this house, that's what's going to sell it. No, there is no renovation in this big study of 22 renovations where you actually recouped all your costs. So you're sitting there thinking, oh, yeah, I'm going to renovate the kitchen, whatever. None of that actually paid you back. So you were out of pocket money for that. What you should really do is, if your house is in decent condition, you know, you have good bones, or you can just do little, you know, upgrades, maybe some new paint or new carpet, but you don't need to overhaul your house. You're probably not going to recoup the money for that.
We're speaking with Katie Hill, editor at MarketWatch. Her piece is called The $17,000 Sweet Spot You Should Know About Before You Sell Your Home. You said set the stage, obviously, right? Give the potential buyer some eye candy in your home.
Yeah, I mean, you can, and even paying staging companies sometimes pays off too. So that's what we're talking about here. There's a big analysis that said it does pay off. You got to get rid of the clutter, especially in those closets. Pack away 50% of your stuff at least. Get rid of all your clutter, and then just do little stuff like, you know, painting the walls neutral so that someone can imagine their life there, right? Put up a few mirrors because that makes the space seem better. You know, a few neutral, tasteful pieces of art. You know, some kind of abstract canvas art or whatever. But things like that really do it. But you've got to declutter your house so that people can walk in and imagine themselves there instead of walking in and imagining you living there with all your stuff crammed into that house.
Thanks, Katie. Katie Hill, editor at MarketWatch, based in New York. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. In today's age, it can be hard to find the time to sit down and learn more. It's not easy when social media can be so addictive, right? So you may think you don't have the time to read a book or develop yourself. If that's the case, there's an app I highly recommend. It's called Blinkist. Blinkist is the only app that identifies the key takeaways, the need-to-know info from thousands of nonfiction books, and condenses them into about 15 minutes so you can read or listen. I like Blinkist because it has a massive and growing library, from self-help and business to health and history books. I can indulge in the topics I want without having to read the entire book. When time is hard to find, find Blinkist. Perfect for your commute. Always wanted the skinny on The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People? Blinkist is for you. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/morning to start your free 7-day trial. That's Blinkist, B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/morning to start your free 7-day trial. Blinkist.com/morning.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show, like us on Facebook, or send us an email, thismorning@compassmedianetworks.com.
Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Friday, May 10. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka, some of our top stories and headlines. Starting earlier today, tariffs on $200 billion on Chinese goods have more than doubled. Suspects in the Colorado school shooting due in court today. Pat Sajak and Vanna White mark episode number 7,000 today on Wheel of Fortune. He's 72, she's 62. A Tigers fan who caught an Albert Pujols home run yesterday for his 2,000th RBI wouldn't swap the historic ball, so baseball won't authenticate it. And what a desperate fisherman did to land his catch. That story in about 20 minutes. It's time for a business update. And it's brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. The businesses of the future are being built today, and Michigan is where they start. Learn more by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity. The Trump administration's Health and Human Services Secretary has announced that the agency will require pharmaceutical companies to reveal the cost of their drugs in TV advertising. The rule, which could go into effect as early as this summer, ideally will drive down costs by empowering consumers to compare prices.
The drug companies have treated us very, very unfairly, and the rules and restrictions within our country have been absolutely atrocious.
Analysis now from Seth Denson, president and co-founder of GDP Advisors, an employee benefits and risk management company. Seth, how do you see it?
Well, I've been tracking this. Secretary Azar has been talking about this for quite some time, and actually came out earlier this year saying this was going to be a priority and something he was going to push for. And so when the White House actually came out and said, "This is, we're going to do this thing," I was really excited. This is a good first step.
All right. So the transparency, as it would seem, with drug prices being announced in TV ads, could we as consumers trust that information?
Well, herein lies some of the challenge, and the devil's always in the details, right? So the complexity by which drugs are bought and sold in the United States is immense. And what I mean by that is the drug marketplace actually works a lot like the stock market does, or the commodities market. It fluctuates daily based on what's called the AWP, or average wholesale price. And so herein lies the challenge of a drug manufacturer posting a price online, because what Secretary Azar wants them to do, and the Trump administration wants them to do, is have to list their AWP. But that changes almost on a daily basis. So there is some details that are going to need to be ironed out. The other thing that consumers need to be aware of, likely what is going to be posted, if it's the AWP, is not what the consumer will pay, at least not directly, because the consumer is going to pay whatever their insurance copayment or coinsurance level is at the end of the day, and that formulary varies based on which insurance company you're using. Here's the indirect way that the consumer is paying for it, though, and why I'm glad that this is a ruling or a rule that's going to be implemented. The consumer is always paying the price of the drug, whether that is through a copayment or whether that is through insurance premiums at the end of the day. Eventually, the consumer is paying for it. Most consumers don't know what the true costs of drugs are. They only know what their copayment is. Yeah. And if we want to start to reduce the cost of healthcare in the United States, the consumer needs to understand the entirety of the cost.
Generally speaking, I know that the pharmaceutical companies do not like this proposal. Is that because they're trying to hide something, or because it actually is complicated based on the way you explained it before?
It's a little bit of both, but I would say that the primary thing that the pharmaceutical industry doesn't like about this is the latter. It's the amount in which it's going to be disclosed on what the cost of these drugs are. Now, understand, though, that in the distribution market of this, it's not just the pharmaceutical company that hates this. There's a lot of stakeholders, or proverbial hands in the cookie jar of prescription drugs, if you will. And the main one is what's called the Pharmacy Benefit Manager, the PBM, of which most PBMs are owned by insurance companies. You want to talk about a conflict of interest. And they really don't want this out there, because PBMs make their money, i.e. the insurance companies make money, based on the spread. What I mean by that is the insurance company via the PBM will buy the drug at a price, mark it up, and then resell it to the end consumer through the formulary structure. And that's how insurance companies owning PBMs make a lot of money. And so this just is going to allow the consumer to start to see behind the curtain of all those hands that are in that cookie jar. So there's a lot of people that do not want this to happen.
We're speaking with Seth Denson, president and co-founder of GDP Advisors, and we're talking about President Trump's announced plan to require drug prices in TV ads. There are certain requirements here, right? That would be a drug that's minimum $35 a month?
That's right. Minimum $35 a month, but again, that's yet to be clarified. Is that $35 a month wholesale price, or is that $35 a month average copayment? So these are some of the details that are going to need to kind of come out, and what does this really mean? It's also drugs that are only sold by Medicare and Medicaid, but that's virtually every drug. I mean, there's not many drugs that aren't sold on the Medicare or Medicaid system. There are details that are need to come out on this, but it's a good first step in the direction that we need to go to infuse transparency.
Thanks, Seth. Seth Denson, president and co-founder of GDP Advisors. It's 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
At Dell, we know running a small business takes hard work. As a thank you, for all of Small Business Month, we're offering up to 45% off select computers with Intel Core processors. Plus, get additional savings when you call a Dell Small Business Technology Advisor. Call 877-BUY-DELL today. That's 877-BUY-DELL. Additional savings valid May 6th through 30th at 8 a.m. Eastern on select computers from customer calls Dell. Excludes Dell Canvas, PowerEdge T30, and select order codes.
In general, I'm a win-win guy. When I have to spend hours searching for the right part, it's lose-lose. It's time lost for me and lost time for my crew. That's why I order from Grainger. With product experts that have the answers to my toughest questions, an easy-to-use website to help me find the right product quickly, I can rely on Grainger to make getting supplies for my business as simple and seamless as possible. When it comes to getting things done, it's a win-win when Grainger's got your back. Call clickgrainger.com or stop by to see for yourself. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Friday Beyond the Headlines now. This morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, we've become accustomed to this scene in baseball games in recent years. A player hits a historic home run, and immediately the person who catches the ball is surrounded by security in an effort to retrieve it. There is usually a transaction where free tickets, jerseys, and other autographed memorabilia are offered up in exchange for it. One fan in Detroit has turned that scenario on its head, however, by refusing to give up the ball. Eli Hides caught a home run from Angels slugger Albert Pujols in a game yesterday. It was Pujols' 2,000th run batted in, and he's just the third player in history to accomplish that feat. Despite generous efforts from the Tigers and Angels, Hides decided to keep the ball. He says he's not in it for the money, he just came for a beer and the game. Pujols, to his credit, has no problem with Hides' decision, saying that he has the right to keep the ball, and he hopes the fan will have memories of the game when he looks at the ball in the future. So goodbye Pujols there.
Yeah.
You know, not wanting to make a big deal about it.
Right. It's only the, you know, it's the third player in history to accomplish the feat. When he becomes the leading all-time RBI guy, then he might be a little more concerned.
You have high standards, don't you?
Well, how about this guy though?
Yeah.
So and listen, he flat out said he's not in it for the money.
Yes.
Because he could have given the ball over, taken jerseys, signed bat,
ball,
or whatever.
Some free
and
then, tickets or something like that.
And then cashed in all that for money if he was after it. But his credit, he seemed to stay true.
Yeah, I guess so. And he also said he didn't like the way security kind of handled it. Like, I guess they came up to him, kind of tried to strong arm him a little
bit. Yeah, that way.
And he was like, look, you know, sorry, not going
to
happen.
He didn't have to work for the ball. There were no fans in those seats, by the way.
Right,
notice
exactly.
That? So, like, the home run went over the fence, clunk, 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 banged around the chairs, and then rolled down some concrete to his feet, apparently.
That certainly helps your odds. And as another week closes, Gordon, it's another week that we don't have the McPickle in our lives, 6 weeks after we were teased with it by McDonald's as an April Fool's prank. Thankfully, there are plenty of other establishments getting creative in order to satisfy our pickle cravings. The latest example, a cafe in Fettes, Missouri, has started serving up pickle split sundaes, swapping out the banana for a dill pickle spear, along with more traditional ingredients like vanilla, chocolate, and strawberry ice cream, along with whipped cream and cherries. The owner of the Pine Mountain Country Coffee House told a local Fox affiliate that it was something they tried out for fun, thinking it would look pretty to share on social media. She thought it would just fade away, but alas, it did not. Since dreaming up the dish, it has taken off with people raving about the bizarre combination on their Facebook page. The response has been so positive, in fact, that the pickle split is set to stay on the cafe's menu for good.
Wow.
Yes. Now, another one of these.
That one's out there. I don't know about that one. That's out there.
Another one of these that if you had one, Gordon, I would try one. Yeah. I would try a spoonful of it while I'm eating my more traditional sundae over on the other side of the table, but I don't know if I would pay money and order one.
Well, for a food item like that, I think I would try it.
Yeah?
I think I would try it. It certainly does not sound good.
Yeah. I mean, it's not going to cost you millions of dollars. It's, you know, it's going to be $5 or something probably. So, yeah, I guess it's not the end of the world if you don't like it.
That's a unique one. A pickle split sundae. Thank you, Mike. 13 minutes in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
Michigan is one of the best places in the country to do business. But you don't have to take our word for it. Take Patty Poppes, president and CEO of Consumers Energy, instead.
All of the innovation that's occurring around robotics, AI, it's happening here in Michigan. We have chemical companies, we have pharmaceutical companies, we have medical device manufacturers. Michigan is a magnet for innovators and dreamers.
Big things are happening in business here. Find out why by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity.
Thanks for being with us. Uber riders traveled the equivalent of about a million times around the Earth's equator last year, but can the ride-hailing company become profitable? Investors will weigh in on that question as Uber starts trading as a public stock today, a much-anticipated event. USA Today put together five key ways Uber has changed the world so far. Number one, it revolutionized transportation. Uber is the largest ride-hailing app and is credited with popularizing the smartphone-based service. Number two, it became a verb. Much like Xerox became synonymous with copying and Google became the term for a generic web search, Uber has become a verb as well. Number three, it accelerated the gig economy. Uber is perhaps the single greatest catalyst in the expansion of the so-called gig economy, which encompasses anyone who performs services for others outside of traditional employment. Number four, it tragically raised awareness of the risks of self-driving cars. And five, it brought attention to sexual harassment and the bro culture in Silicon Valley. 8 minutes in front of the hour on this morning. Jennifer Koshenka is back with more of America's First News.
According to President Trump's administration allowed U.S. tariffs on $200 billion in Chinese goods to more than double, even as officials said high-stakes negotiations intended to broker a new agreement would continue today. U.S. and Chinese negotiators failed to reach an agreement ahead of the president's self-imposed midnight deadline, meaning tariffs jumped to 25% from 10% on a massive range of Chinese goods, including office furniture, handbags, and frozen catfish. China's Commerce Ministry says it will take necessary countermeasures, but did not give any details. The man accused of killing one person and wounding three last month at a synagogue outside San Diego has been charged with more than 100 federal hate crimes. U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of California, Robert Brewer, says John Ernest has been charged with two types of hate crime, including the obstruction of free exercise of religious beliefs using a dangerous weapon for each of the 54 people in the synagogue when he allegedly opened fire on April 27th.
This federal complaint alleges that these crimes were explicitly motivated by hatred toward the Jewish and Muslim communities.
Ernest also was charged with one count of damage to religious property in connection with a fire in March at a mosque in Escondido. Former Army intelligence analyst Chelsea Manning has been released from a Northern Virginia jail after a two-month stay for refusing to testify to a grand jury about WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange. But freedom may be short-lived. Before she left the jail, Manning received another subpoena demanding her testimony on May 16th to a new grand jury. Her lawyers say she will again refuse to answer questions, which could quickly land her back in jail. Amazon founder Jeff Bezos has announced his plans for space colonization starting with the moon.
We will run out of energy on Earth. This is just arithmetic. It's going to happen.
Bezos's Blue Origin plans to build and launch a commercially developed lunar lander, a spacecraft capable of carrying scientific payloads and astronauts to landings on the moon by 2024. Secretly under development for the past 3 years, Bezos says the Blue Moon lander will be capable of landing up to 6.5 metric tons of equipment on the lunar surface.
Wow. There's your house and your car and all that.
Ready to go?
Right. At some point, someday, you think we could say, hey, you want to have lunch on the moon this afternoon? Right? Like we could get there that quickly.
In our lifetimes? I don't know.
Maybe not in our lifetime. Thanks, Jen. 6 minutes now in front of the hour. Thanks for joining us. Nothing will come between this Georgia angler and his catch. Avid fisherman Lee Sant was filmed diving from his bass boat into a lake head first after his line broke while reeling the fish in. In the video, you can see him battling the fish from a camera he has on the boat until the line breaks and the bass seems to get away. However, Mr. Sant lurches into the water after it.
Yes! Did you see that?
That's him climbing back into the boat. He told YOLO Tech that he pinned the fish against his face in the commotion, resulting in a little scratch. Said when he entered the water, he didn't let go of the fish until he knew he had a good grip and felt it was starting to come up. Mr. Sant posted the footage of his daring catch on social media in March. Says when you have a chunker on the line, you do what you got to do. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.